And welcome to Sundance on the Weekend, Sunday edition. I'm Rick Bruff, and we're here for the next couple of hours talking to filmmakers, industry people, and Sundance folk about what's going on at the festival. This week, or this morning, my special co-host is Stacey Domalski. Hi, Stace.
Hey, Rick. How's it going?
Otherwise, sometimes known as Cecil B. Domalski.
Oh, stop.
The multi-talented, besides being a involved... Hello? a screenwriter, a director, stand-up comic, slash... committed community member? What, any categories?
No, that's plenty, Rick, on a Sunday morning, yeah.
And to start with, we're on with the director of All the Beautiful Things, John Harkrider. And let's see, John, you have, your film hasn't quite seen a festival audience yet. Is it it's tomorrow?
Yeah, it's the world premiere will be tomorrow at 6 p.m. Mm.
I just to start with, the most striking thing is I was just reading the summation of the film, and I had to sort of look and make sure I was in the right part of the program because it's documentary. But I thought, wait, is this a typo? Is this something from the dramatic competition that accidentally got put in here? Because the description sounds two guys meet at a bar dealing with their past. How are you doing a documentary about something that sounds like a dramatic premise here?
Well, I think life can be dramatic, and I think that what the film is about. Why don't we start there, and then sort of talk about how it built from sort of a traditional documentary to something that's perhaps, at least stylistically, more of a hybrid, but in its essence, entirely a documentary. So around 15 years ago, a girl who was a friend of mine came up to me and told me that my best friend had beaten her up and raped her, and then asked me what she should do. And I had come from a history when I was a kid of a lot of domestic violence, and I wasn't about to tell a girl who had bruises on her face and a little mark on her neck where she said the knife had been that she should, suck it up and not tell anybody. So I said, you should go to the police, which is what she did, and she pressed charges. And my best friend, who had been my best friend for 30 years, it was not like, some guy I'd been friends with, for the last, 2 weeks. He wasn't my Facebook friend, right? He was a real friend. And, we had gone through a lot in life. And he was black and I was white. And I didn't first fully anticipate what was going to happen, with the police. I didn't fully understand, that he was going to get thrown against the wall and handcuffed and put on trial where he was going to be facing 80 years to life. And I didn't realize that she was lying the whole time, which is something that came out later. He was ultimately acquitted. So, that's the story. And so the story is, why we were friends, how we were friends, how this event occurred, and how we resolved our friendship. So that's sort of the premise. That's what the story is about. And there were lots of different ways of doing this. One way is to have a traditional documentary where we would just be interviewed with a interviewer behind the camera. And I'm a stylistic filmmaker. I mean, I really love aesthetics. And that wasn't entirely pleasing to me. So I said, why can't I take the interviewer and take them from behind the camera to in front of the camera? And having put them in front of the camera, why can't they be, a bartender or a cab driver or a limo driver? All sort of typical situations where you might be engaged in long conversations with somebody. And then having made the decision that this person could be any one of those characters, why does the, you know, the room have to be, you know, a white box with, you know, someone's two people sitting there? Why can't it be, you know, a bar, and why can't it have tons of people in it? And so the reason it's a documentary is because we're not recreating anything. What we're doing is we're going to a place in real life, in real time, where we're talking to the person driving us there about sort of what's going on in our lives and why we're going there. And then we get to a bar that has lots of people in it, and has, you know, a jazz band playing. And we talk to each other and through the bartender about both how we became friends, sort of telling that story to her. And then, you know, we have a pretty big argument
now,
about that.
I have a question about that. How did you convince him? His name's Baron, right?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
How did you convince him to do this? I mean, it's a little bit of it's almost a little too much reality documentary. Mm-hmm. And I mean, how did that conversation go down where you first approach him and say, I have a really good idea. You know that riff we have between us that almost changed your life or did change your life? I'd like to talk about it in a public place in front of a camera and then put it up on a big screen for all the world to see. What do you think?
Right. Okay, so that's a great question. So, you know, we're both film lovers, and, you know, this isn't my first film. And we both, you know, I think it's really two different things. I think, first of all, he wanted to tell his story, right? I mean, one of the things that this woman did, which was probably my first indication that she probably wasn't telling the truth, is he's a well-known photographer. And so one of the first things that she did is she sent faxes to the New York Times, to Forbes, to Vibe, to every place that he had worked for, and he had done, you know, the cover of the magazine, and said, you know, my name is blank. I was raped by this other guy, and don't ever hire him. He's a rapist. And, you know, I'm not a woman. I've never been raped. I don't pretend to know anything about that, except for the fact that I think it's pretty highly unlikely that a woman would broadcast that. And what was actually going on was vengeance.
Mm-hmm.
And because he had broken up with her and there was a bad situation there, and she, you know, she wanted to get even with him. So there were lots of rumors that got spread as a result of that. And so he wanted to sort of, you know, it wasn't enough to be acquitted. He also wanted to tell his story. And this is why this is the story of his innocence. So that was part of it. Another part of it was, you know, we both love film, and we both thought we could make something really beautiful. And we both thought that, together we could make a very beautiful document in some sense of both our friendship, our lives, and things that we cared a lot about, not just the trial, but race relations or just social justice or other things that we cared a lot about.
Mm-hmm. Is he out here this week?
Yes, he is.
So he'll be at the Q&A sessions as well?
Yes, he will be.
And this was all in Boston? No.
So we're from Boston.
Uh-huh.
We grew up in Boston. So the film takes place both in Boston and New York. And it's somewhat lyrical. We actually, in the last act, were walking back from Boston to New York through the seasons, through winter until spring.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, you know, had to shoot in every single one of – that's actually one of the bigger challenges, was to find something that you could wear in the dead of winter and also in spring that was not going to both freeze you and make you warm. So.
Yeah. Was there ever a point when you were having this conversation together in front of the camera where you go down this path, and then all of a sudden one of you or both go, "Oh, this is getting a little harder than I thought"? Or did you come upon a point where you wanted to turn off the camera but you didn't, or did you just forget the camera was there?
Yeah, I think, and that's actually probably the way it is most a documentary, is that it was, you know, we had, you know, 100 people in this bar. We had a wonderful jazz band playing John Coltrane's A Love Supreme, which no one's ever gotten the rights to until we did. And, you know, everyone's drinking and they're smoking and it felt like we were, you know, we're at a bar. And so, you know, we didn't say, "Oh, there's a camera over there." It was just, we were having this conversation. Now, the conversation got brutal at certain points, and it was very challenging. And there were times at which I was actually concerned, especially in the beginning, I was concerned about, you know, whether the film was actually going to complete, because, I mean, we wanted to kill each other. We were both very, very angry at each other. And but the funny thing is, despite all of the sort of, you know, impetus to make the film, this sort of driving, you know, passion to make the film because we both wanted to tell our stories, once we got it out and sort of finished the film, I was like, I think we both of us were like, why did we make this film? You know,
yeah.
So the thing that you're talking about actually came out more at the end because sort of the angst was gone and because we had reached sort of a peace and a repose. And then once you're in that position of peace and repose, you don't quite have the same motivation that you had in the beginning. So now is actually a more interesting time in terms of showing the film because to some extent the motivating and animus of behind the film is actually absent now.
Mm-hmm.
Is this the first time for Baron to see the film?
No, he's seen the film before. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, gosh, what a cathartic thing, you know, to be able to go through this. And without giving anything away, just in general terms, is there closure for him with his accuser? I mean, how did she's probably not in it other than in conversation.
No, she's not in it. We don't use her name.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, it was a little odd, you know, especially at the trial, because it was odd that her family didn't show up, for instance, and her parents didn't show up. So, you know, she played God, and maybe I played God as well. And I think part of the film is about recognizing that. That's maybe something you shouldn't be doing.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So.
Okay. And as we said, John, your first screening is tomorrow at the Temple Theater, the Temple Har Shalom, so a good appropriate venue for a theme of people playing God. and also following that Wednesday at the Redstone, you're down in Salt Lake later on in the week, and then back at Friday at the Prospector Square Theater and Saturday at the Yarrow Hotel. So John Hartwriter, director and subject from All the Beautiful Things, thank you for being there.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
The Local View is on the air each weekday, 3 p.m. to 7 p.m. right here on KPCW, featuring national news from NPR, international headlines with the BBC, and plenty of local news from our award-winning news department. Interviews, music, your phone calls, lost and found, public service announcements, and I'll be your host. This is Randy Barton. Sponsored by CNS Creative Services, Ramp Sports, Mercer Automotive, and Molly Bloom's Gastro Pub.
Deer Valley Etc. is delighted to support KPCW. Located at the Snow Park Lodge, we offer specialty coffee drinks, sundries, Deer Valley signature food, and select logo items. For information, 649-1000 or DeerValley.com.